taking their place in a long, true line of everyday Americans.
Helping to secure the blessings of liberty to ourselves and our posterity, this is the Constitution Study on the America Out Loud Network with your host, Paul Engel.
Pay the bills, stay out of jail, love the neighbors, and have a few good friends. Every day you are everyday Americans.
Hello there, everyday Americans, and welcome to the Constitution Study. This is where we read and study the Constitution. We teach the rising generation to be free. I'm glad you could join me today. You know, I'm sure most of you are familiar with the phrase splitting the baby. It comes from a story from the Old Testament of the Bible where King Solomon was given a decision that was impossible to make. There were two women, both claiming to be the mother of a single child. Without DNA tests or other things, how was the king supposed to decide whose child, which mother got the child? In the story, Solomon orders a sword and orders the child to be split in half, one half given to each mother. Now, of course, the real mother renounced her claim, was immediately identified as the true mother, because a mother would rather have someone else raise her child and watch the child die. And since then, this has become a metaphor, a saying that was meant to show, how do you deal with a difficult decision? How do you split the baby without splitting the baby? Well, split the baby is pretty much what it appears the Supreme Court has done in the recent orders, the recent applications for stays involving the Biden administration's quote-unquote vaccine mandates. I say split the baby because they had two sets of cases to deal with, and they kind of split their decisions. Now, I will take more time at a later date to go into more detail, but I wanted to get out in front and tell you what I've read so far about this. These opinions. Now, the first of these case sets involves NFIB versus OSHA and Ohio versus OSHA, and this deals with the private business mandate, the OSHA regulation, stating that businesses with 100 employees or more must enforce either a vaccine mandate or a mask and test mandate. Now, the Sixth Circuit, looking at the case, determined that a stay was not justified, which is why it was appealed to the Supreme Court. And the Supreme Court disagreed. According to the opinion of the court, quote, applicants are likely to succeed on the merits of their claim that the secretary lacked authority to impose the mandate. Administrative agencies are creatures of statute. They accordingly possess only the authority that Congress has provided them. The court then goes on and refers to the law that created OSHA and the powers that were given to OSHA, and basically concluded that it did not include the power to issue nationwide mandates, much less healthcare mandates, not simply workplace mandates, but actual healthcare mandates, because they have there's a public content to them. It's not simply occupational health. It is public health, and that is beyond the scope of OSHA. That's basically the gist of what the court found. Now, this was a 6-3 decision. Breyer, Sotomayor, and Kagan all dissented with the opinion. Reading from the dissent, every day COVID-19 poses grave dangers to the citizens of this country, and particularly to its workers. The disease has by now killed almost 1 million Americans and hospitalized almost 4 million. It spreads by person-to-person contact in confined indoor spaces, so it causes harm in nearly all workplace environments. And in these environments, more than any other, individuals have little control and therefore little capacity to mitigate risk. COVID-19, in short, is a menace in work settings. The proof is all around us. Since the disease's onset, most Americans have seen their workplaces transformed. So the administrative agency charged with ensuring health and safety in the workplace did what Congress commanded it to do. It took action to address COVID-19 continuing threat in those workspaces. So the opinion of the dissent is, listen, COVID is bad. It's dangerous. Therefore, we must do anything possible. Now, I'm going to go into this in more detail later. It's going to take time for me to read through and digest and put together my thoughts. But here's my first impressions. Justices Breyer, Sotomayor, and Kagan literally destroyed their own argument in the opening of their dissent. So they say that COVID-19 by now has killed almost 1 million Americans. But that depends very much on whose numbers you're looking at. Now, while the CDC has listed over 800,000 deaths, they recently admitted that, 75% of them died with at least four other comorbidities? In other words, these weren't healthy people that got COVID and died. These were unhealthy people that happened to have COVID. And they don't distinguish between those that COVID was the primary cause of death and COVID was, just there. So the same with the hospitalizations. The numbers are inflated. But it goes beyond that. And this is where I think these three justices shoot themselves in the foot and really show the difference of opinion of of these two schools of thought. See, according to the justices, in those workplace environments, more than any other, individuals have little control and therefore little capacity to mitigate risk. I'm sorry, I do not know of one employer that refuses to employ someone if they take the COVID shot. See, if we are to believe Breyer, Sotomayor, and Kagan, then the shot is the only way to stop the spread. There's nothing preventing individuals from getting the shot. And if the shot actually worked, well, then the fact that your coworker didn't get the shot wouldn't mean anything. So this is, again, proof that this is not dealing with a workplace danger. This is a desire to see people vaccinated. There's also an interesting thing, and I want to cover I want to get more into this later, but there's an interesting general difference in worldview between the dissenting justices, the affirming justices, and the Constitution itself. But so that was the OSHA. So as of today, there is a stay in place against private businesses being forced to require vaccines as a condition of employment. But there was another case that came forth, and this had to do with the Secretary of Health and Human Services and using the Medicaid and Medicare programs to, again, force healthcare workers to receive the shot. Now, the other case that was dealt with the HHS mandates, and this case is actually Biden versus Missouri and Becerra versus Louisiana. Now, in this case, that mandate, which referred to the HHS mandate or the Medicaid, Medicare mandate, requiring employers who receive Medicaid and Medicare funds to require their employees to get vaccinated, or quote unquote vaccinated, that was actually stayed in the lower court, and the Biden administration and both President Biden and Secretary Becerra petitioned the Supreme Court to overturn the stay. Now, part of their justification, quoting from the opinion, one such function, perhaps the most basic given the department's core mission, is to ensure that the healthcare providers who care for Medicare and Medicaid patients protect their patients' health and safety. Okay, that makes sense. Going on a little farther, this is relying on these authorities, the secretary has established long lists of detailed conditions with which facilities must comply to be eligible to receive Medicare and Medicaid funds. And the court went on. And basically the court said, listen, unlike the OSHA case, the court said, We agree with the government that the secretary's rule falls within the authority that Congress has conferred upon him. In other words, they go ahead to say that Congress has authorized the secretary to impose conditions on the receipt of Medicaid and Medicare funds that the secretary finds necessary in the interest of the health and safety of individuals who are furnished services. Again, I want to go into more detail on that on a later date. But there's more I want to look at. So basically, the court said, listen, we are going to overturn the stay preventing the HHS mandate, the Medicaid, Medicare mandate, the healthcare worker mandate from going into effect. Now, as you would expect, there were dissents. Justices Thomas, Alito, Gorsuch, and Barrett joined into a dissent where they said, 2 months ago, the Department of Health and Human Services, acting through the Centers for Medicaid and Medicare Services, issued an omnibus rule mandating that medical facilities nationwide order their employees, volunteers, contractors, and other workers to receive a COVID-19 vaccine. Covered employers must fire noncompliant workers or risk fines and termination of their Medicare and Medicaid provider agreements. As a result, the government has effectively mandated vaccination for 10 million healthcare workers. Notice something important here. You see, the justices that agreed with the opinion said, listen, all they're doing is setting a condition for receiving Medicaid and Medicare. But the dissent says, now, wait a second. Either they the order says either they fire those who do not comply or risk fines and termination of their agreements. So it's not simply, hey, you won't be covered and you won't be allowed anymore to deal with Medicaid and Medicare patients. You're going to get fined. So again, this is a, a split the baby moment. How do we deal with this when we say, okay, the federal government has the authority to require healthcare workers to be vaccinated, but not the authority to have other private businesses vaccinated? And again, I need time to digest all of this, to put this in a more coherent standpoint, for which I'll get to shortly. But there are two things in these opinions that I want to bring to mind. One is the most basic of questions here. The question that came up in the oral arguments in the OSHA cases, but is just as prescient here, is who decides? People agree. We want workplaces to be safe places to work. We don't want to go to work in a place that's unhealthy. But who decides? We don't want medical care from locations that are unsafe, unhealthy. But who decides? To me, this is the core question, and this is the core question of the entire governmental reaction to COVID-19 since its inception. Who decides? Which is where we get, to me, the split the baby moment, because the court looks at it and said, well, okay, we're going to split this baby. We're going to let healthcare workers be mandated, but everyone else not. And unless I'm wrong, based on the oral arguments, it really comes down to some here, there, weird interpretations of Social Security Act and the powers given to the Department of Health and Human Services and the secretary of that department. So this is the definitive good news, bad news. This is the split the baby. But there's one other important point I want you to consider here. And I found this in reading both the per curiam and the dissents in both of these cases. And the difference that I see underlying all of this is very simple. See, there's one group of justices that appears to believe, for the most part, that an executive agency can only do what Congress has specifically authorized it to do. Right? It's a limited power. We've authorized you to do this. If we don't specifically tell you you can do this, you cannot do it. There's another group that says, well, they can do anything that's sort of related to what Congress says, as long as Congress didn't specifically say no. Do you notice a difference? See, one tends to defer to the actual language that Congress used when they wrote the law. The other defers to the interpretation of the executive agency. And that seems to be the basis. Again, I've only perused these cases, these orders very briefly, these opinions very briefly. But that appears to be, from both the oral arguments and these opinions, the point of view of these two different groups of justices. See, in one case, they looked at it and said, OSHA was not given the authority to regulate anything outside of the workplace. They're trying to regulate public health. Therefore, that's not allowed. And in the HHS, they look at it and say, listen, yeah, you've got some language about promulgating regulations, but there's nothing there about vaccine mandates. So since Congress didn't specifically say you could do it, you can't. And on the other side of the coin, you have one that said, well, you know, OSHA is exposed to create safety standards, and Congress didn't say they couldn't use mandates and vaccination mandates, so that's okay. They looked at it and said Health and Human Services, they're supposed to make sure that places providing services that are paid for by Medicaid and Medicare are done healthfully. They didn't say that the secretary could not use mandates, so they can use mandates. And what's interesting is both sides won one. Both point of views came to bear in these cases, in these opinions. Now, based on the reports I've heard, court watchers will be, well, they'll have mixed opinions. I'm sure many of them will focus on the OSHA stay put in place and say, see, we told you the court's going to side on this side. Some of them may even look at the HHS and say, well, I guess we weren't as smart as we thought we were. But I want to point out one other thing before I continue on. And that is, in looking at the opinions, if rather than looking as, you know, who was stays and who wasn't, the question becomes who was in support of the mandates and who was against the mandates. So by looking at the different opinions and who dissented from what, I'll put you this way. Justices Alito, Thomas, Gorsuch, and Barrett appeared to be against the mandates in both cases, while Justices Breyer, Sotomayor, and Kagan were for the mandates in both sets of cases. So if you do the math on that, you'll find out there are two justices that gave us, say, split decisions, that split the baby. You see, Chief Justice Roberts and Associate Justice Kavanaugh were the deciding factor. Both of them voted to support the stay in OSHA and against the stay in HHS. So if you think about it, whether or not the government can mandate that you become a guinea pig, that you take an experimental a pharmaceutical, actually came down to the decision of not even nine justices in black robes. Two men made the decision. Two men decided that the government couldn't force private businesses to require a mandate unless they accepted money for Medicaid and Medicare. I guess this is another example of bribery in America, right? Because if these businesses, if these healthcare industries did not take Medicaid and Medicare funds, well, the government would have no power over them. But you see, by taking the Medicaid and Medicare funds, now they do. And it's pretty much the same from the OSHA side as well, right? In other words, we saw situations where employers were not providing sufficient safety. as a society, or at least some in our society, looked at it and said, you know what, this isn't right. We'll get the bully of government to enforce our will on others. Forget having, you know, employees maybe, if not join a union, at least work together and say, no, we won't work under these conditions. We didn't try that. We didn't rely on the people to figure it out. No, we got government. We had the 800-pound gorilla, with the force of law, and we asked them to be our guardians, to protect us, in many cases, from our own decisions. And now we're suffering the consequences. So yes, we have sit here and watched while the court split the baby. They gave, you know, a little bit here and a little bit there, but see, in the Solomon story, the mother, the real mother, backed up. She said, no, let the other woman have the baby, because that was more important. And the American people, we didn't do that. We didn't decide that, you know what, our freedom and liberty meant we had to do things for ourselves. We decided to give government that power, and now, decades later, that government is exercising that power. Now, granted, I believe there is sufficient evidence to show, at least within a reasonable doubt, or beyond a reasonable doubt, that these mandates are put in place because the Biden administration knows they couldn't get these mandates through Congress. Congress isn't passing these mandates. That's a whole other question about whether the Constitution authorizes it. I'm not even going there at this point. But this is a way to get around the Constitution, to get around Congress. To paraphrase one of his predecessors, to use his pen and his phone to get what he wants. Damn the law, damn the Constitution. Let's see what we can get. So now we have a situation where, according to the court, if you work in the healthcare industry, anything the Secretary of HHS thinks is best for you, or best for Medicaid and Medicare patients, if you're an employee of one of these organizations, you have to bend the knee. Bend the knee to the Secretary of HHS or lose your job. I feel for the people who have to make these decisions. But it's the fact that they are in this position because we, the people, we let it happen. We looked at this and said, let government enforce it. And then we sat back while the court dictated to the rest of the nation how much of a dictator Washington, D.C. could be. So America, be thankful for the OSHA opinion. Healthcare workers, I feel for you, but it's the American people that have let this happen. Because I have not heard one person in Congress say, we need to pass legislation to tell the president he can't do this. Now, maybe it's out there, maybe I just haven't heard it. But if I'm not hearing it, how many people are out calling for it? Now, I have to head off to a break, but before I do, please do me a favor, head over to constitutionstudy.com. All the work that I do, you know, I mentioned I'm going to go into more depth. I wrote an article going through the details of the oral arguments on these two cases. I will write another article going through the opinions. You can get the audio, video, and the written version all there on constitutionstudy.com. It's also where you can ask a question. I'm still looking for questions for a Q&A segment on the radio program. So just click the Ask a Question button, and when you fill out the form, just check the little box that says Answer on the Radio, and I will. You can also find links to other companies I support and I work with, and if you want to support the Constitution Study, you can donate there as well. But anything you find on the Constitution Study is free for you to use. It's free for you to share. Go ahead. That's what it's there for. Also, please check out healthycell.com. You know, vitamins haven't changed since the 1930s, and some of you may find swallowing vitamins to be difficult. Well, Healthy Cell is upgraded to a pill-free solution. That's right, you can get your vitamins without struggling with the pills. They have different formulas based on your needs, and they all come as travel-ready gel packs. That's right, you either just squeeze a pack in your mouth or mix it in a food or drink, and voila, you can get your vitamins. Now, they have different formulas, but today I want to talk about Immune Super Boost. You know, during this whole COVID scare, one of the things that my wife and I have done is made sure we had a decent vitamin supplements, that our immune system was being supported with things like D3 and vitamin C. And, well, use the Immune Super Boost to help strengthen your immune system, not just against COVID, but against the flu, the cold, or any of the common diseases we come across. Now, as an America Out Loud listener, you get 20% off your first order if you use the code OUTLOUD at checkout. So give them a try. That's HealthyCell.com. Choose any of their products. When you check out, use the code OUTLOUD to get 20% off your first order.
Because of COVID-19, many Americans worry about their health 4 times a day. That's 112 times per month. But by simply keeping our immune system strong, we can stay healthy and put our worries at ease. One little known way to do this is by taking AC11, a patented supplement from a plant in the Amazon rainforest. Studied for over 20 years and backed by over 40 scientific peer-reviewed studies, taking AC11 has been proven to extend the life of immune cells called leukocytes, allowing you to boost immunity naturally. Go to HealthyCell.com and use code OUTLOUD for 20% off your first order of AC11. That's HealthyCell.com, HealthyCell, and use code OUTLOUD for 20% off.
Had they taken the poll in Philadelphia in 1776, they would have scrapped the whole idea of independence. A third of the country was for it, a third of the country was against it, and the remaining third, well, in the old human way, was waiting to see who came out on top. Those are the words of David McCullough. Join us back at AmericaOutLoud.com and find out which of today's politicians are in which third. America Out Loud Talk Radio, liberty and justice for all.
Hello there, everyday Americans, and welcome back to the Constitution Study. You know, we've been talking today about, well, the split decision out of the Supreme Court. The fact that the court put in or issued an injunction, a stay on the OSHA mandate, vaccine mandate, but lifted a stay on the HHS vaccine mandate. And this idea that we've kind of, well, we'll split the difference. And what does that mean for, you know, not just for Americans today? I mean, that's important. We've given government a big stick and they've just used it to, well, whack about 10 million of us. But what does it mean for the rest of our relationship with government? How we react, how we deal with government, and what government powers are actually legitimate? Now, as I understand it, I found this article on Daily Caller. They are expecting thousands of federal employees to protest the vaccine, the federal vaccine mandate. Now, they plan to be peaceful, but they over 6,000 members of Feds for Medical Freedom are planning this march. Feds for Medical Freedom is a national grassroots coalition. They've got federal workers from around the country. They are joining with firefighters and first responders to knock down these mandates. And this is the first problem I want to see. What happens? You know, we've got this split decision. We have an executive branch that is trying to rule like a kingdom. We have a legislative branch that is, well, just consumed with their own petty politics. And we have a judicial branch that, well, is more interested in their own opinion than in the Constitution or laws of the United States. So now we have this, again, split decision. Are mandates legal or not? Is this court going to support mandates or not? And under what basis did we authorize the federal government to issue mandates? Those questions never seem to come up in these discussions. So we have, well, let's say some very unhappy people. As I said, those who work for private employers where the OSHA mandate was stayed, well, they're probably pretty happy right now. They look at it, they're going, okay, I'm not going to be forced to decide between being a medical experiment and having a job. But then again, we've got millions of Americans that are healthcare workers that the court said, yes, now you do have to decide between being a medical experiment or having a job. No consideration was given for natural immunity. No consideration was given for other effective treatments or treating the disease. Nope. It's the shot or bust. So I expect the Feds for Medical Freedom to not be the last group that will continue to protest these mandates. Because, let's face it, when you have a group of people who don't feel like they're being heard, who don't feel like their rights are being considered, their rights are being protected, what are they going to do? Now, understand, the Declaration of Independence said that we have certain unalienable rights that include those things are liberty and the pursuit of happiness. The Fifth Amendment says you cannot be deprived of life, liberty, or property without due process of law, yet these mandates deprive you of both liberty and property without due process of law. They claim they're doing it because, well, it's necessary. It's for the common good, but we're dealing with a disease with a low death rate. Sure, you know, Sotomayor said, oh, look, there's going to be a million people dead. There's probably a million people dead by now, of which we know that a large percentage of them are people who died with COVID, not necessarily of COVID. We know that hospitals are there talks about hospitals overflowing. But we haven't seen people in the streets. And in fact, many of the hospitals apparently are having a hard time even maintaining staff levels to keep all their beds available, which is part of the reason why they're overflowing. And Vermont's complaining because people are rushing to the emergency room every time they get a positive test for COVID, flooding the emergency room. It's the outcome of the scare campaign we've been living with the last 2 years. But the Declaration of Independence also says that to secure these rights, governments are instituted among men, deriving their just powers from the consent of the governed. How do these mandates secure our rights? Oh, well, we're trying to keep you safe. No, you're telling me how to keep myself safe. They even admitted during oral arguments that the people most at risk are the unvaccinated. Now, they also are effectively saying, well, you know, the vaccines don't really work because they don't really vaccinate you because you can still get the disease. There's so much here that we're dealing with, and people are frustrated, which is why I'm not surprised they're starting with demonstrations. But what happens after the demonstrations? Well, Declaration of Independence tells us that whenever any form of government becomes destructive of these ends, the protections of the people's rights, it is the right of the people to alter or abolish it. See, that's the part that we should be concerned about. See, when our government stops protecting rights, we start with lawsuits and we start with protests. But sooner or later, one or two things happens. Either we give in and submit to the infringement of our rights, or we attempt to alter or abolish our government. That to me is a dangerous thought. Not the altering. I fully believe we should alter our government. I believe that President Lincoln was right when he said, "The people are the rightful masters of both Congresses and courts, not to overturn the Constitution, but to overturn the people who pervert the Constitution." We should do that. But that brings up two interesting questions. Okay, we alter who are the people in government. If we don't pick better people, if we the people don't have a better process for choosing our leaders, now, I don't mean voting and necessarily how we vote. I mean how we decide who to vote for. We're going to end up with the same people. Just look at the state of New York. But there are going to be some people that get frustrated enough that altering government won't be sufficient. They'll want to abolish it. They're out there. They're out there today. Remember, Antifa and CHOP and CHAP and all these areas that wanted to get rid of the current government in this one small area? What happens when there are more people that are involved in that? What happens when that sentiment spreads? What happens when the people get so frustrated with the abuses of their rights that they just won't take it anymore? I don't want to see that. I've been saying for years, we must fix these problems now while we can do them in safety at the ballot box, or our children will be forced to fight for them on the battlefield. And I know more and more people are getting frustrated. And I pray that we realize that we don't have to shoot our way to liberty. But we do need to hold our elected officials accountable. Hold them accountable at the ballot box. Hold them accountable in the court of law. Hold them accountable while they're sitting in office. See, right now, let's face it, most politicians are more worried about what some special donor group is going to do. They're more worried about what some of their special interest groups are going to say than what their constituents are going to say. I mean, let's face it, when was the last time you actually got to meet with your congressman? No, we need to find ways to defend ourselves, and I want to talk about more about that a little later, but first, there's a couple other articles I want to get to. Biden made another totalitarian, dictatorial King Biden announcement. He plans to launch an effort to make high-quality masks available to Americans for free. Yeah, he said that back on January 13th. He says, "While there is an ample supply of top-notch masks at affordable prices, available online and in stores, Biden says for some, well, that's not affordable." So guess what? Now, would you please tell me where the Constitution delegates to the United States, period, the authority to provide medical gear, first aid gear, whatever you want to call it, for a taxpayer expense to the American people? See, first of all, he's lying. He's not making them available for free. You're paying for them through your taxes, and you're paying for them through the inflation from all the borrowed money. You're paying for them in the interest you're paying on the loans that are being taken out to pay for all this nonsense. So they're not free. But again, where did the federal government, where did Biden get the legal authority to do this? The answer is he made it up out of thin air. And nobody's doing anything about it. Now, why do you think President Biden wants to offer free masks to the American people? Is it because masks are so unbelievably effective that if we all just wore masks, COVID would be over? Well, no, that never worked. It didn't work early in the pandemic. The tests show that even the EPA says, depending on the mask, you're only stopping about 40% or so of the virus from getting through, which means you're still inhaling 60% of it. No, it's very simple. He who pays the piper calls the tune. This is flat-out bribery. This is President Biden trying to improve his image, improve his favorability numbers by bribing the American people, saying, "We'll just give you masks." And sadly, a large percentage of the American people, I think, will take the bribe. Because history shows the American people are more than happy to take the bribe from Washington, D.C., or from their state house. This is bribery, folks. Now, the president can be impeached for bribery. He's taking your money to buy masks and then giving them back to you without legal authority. Because what happens next? Oh, well, you see, now, if you don't do what we want, you don't get your free goodie. I don't know many people that would give up too much in exchange for a free mask, but there are people out there. It's just another bribe. And sadly, many of the American people, I believe, will take the bribe. Next, Joe Biden has learned a lesson. You see, he learned that, according to the Supreme Court, if you're sneaky about it, you can bypass the Constitution and Congress and all that stuff and get what you want by getting private companies to do it for you. So now, President Joe Biden wants social media companies to censor information he doesn't like. Again, he didn't put it that way, but that's effectively what he's saying. I mean, he said in an address, he pleaded. He made a special appeal to social media companies to please deal with the misinformation and disinformation that's on their programs. He said it has to stop, admonishing big tech and the media for somehow sitting on the sidelines by not censoring enough speech. They're already censoring speech. But Mr. Biden, who decides what information you want them to censor? You've already admitted that your administration is sending names to Facebook of people that you want censored. That you think if they're censored off Facebook, they should be censored off of all platforms. You've already admitted that you don't give a rat's behind about the First Amendment. That you are wiping your backside with the Constitution. Yet where is the call? Where is the call for the crime of infringing on the American people's right to freedom of speech? Where? Where is the impeachment for him calling for the federal government to influence speech, to restrict people's speech based on what the federal government wants you to say? But Paul, he didn't actually write an executive order. No, he's getting someone else to do his dirty work. This is a banana republic. Right now, 2022, America is effectively a banana republic if we let a dictator in chief censor speech directly or indirectly. It is criminal. Title 18, United States Code, Section 242. Tell me, where is the U.S. attorney that is filing criminal charges? Where is the Congressional Committee? Where is the Department of Justice? Granted, Department of Justice, U.S. Attorney's Office, they're part of the executive branch. Where are the states filing criminal charges against the President of the United States? But Paul, you can't arrest the President. You can't charge. Oh, yes, you can. There is nothing in the Constitution that says the president cannot be charged for a crime while in office. You don't have to, states, you don't have to wait for impeachment. If he is committing a crime, you should be filing the complaint. You should be urging the U.S. Attorney's Office to file criminal complaints against Biden, against anybody with the imprimatur of a government office, under color of any law, regulation, or custom to infringe on the rights of the American people. Now, it's not going to happen. Partially because, let's face it, most of the people we would expect to file these charges work for the corrupter in chief that is actually committing the crimes. So they're not going to do it. They're cowards. The states aren't going to do it because, well, they're ignorant cowards. They don't even realize they have the power to censure the president. And the members of Congress, who should be the first step, the members of the House, your representatives, that should be the first step in dealing with an out-of-control president, is more worried about party politics than they are freedom and liberty in this country. And I want you to notice something. Every time someone in Congress talks about a threat to our democracy, you ever notice how what they're talking about is a threat to the Democratic Party? Because America is not a democracy. We used to be a constitutional republic. We are losing that. We are in the process right now of devolving into a banana republic, into a dictatorial socialist excuse for a banana republic. It is happening right in front of our eyes. And the American people are squabbling amongst themselves and unwilling to do anything about it. One more reason why we should not be dependent on anyone. We should not be dependent on big tech. It's one of the reasons why I put my videos on multiple platforms. It's one of the reasons why I'm hosting my own services as much as possible. Because right now, we are watching our rights and liberties be rolled up and tossed away, and the American people are just sitting back and watching. And the last one I want to talk about today, before I wrap up. Why is it the federal government is effectively cornering the market on monoclonal antibodies? Why have they made deals with the manufacturers to buy up all of these monoclonal so that they get to control how they're distributed? Tell me, where in the Constitution is the federal government authorized to do that? The answer is nowhere. You know, people say the Constitution doesn't matter. It doesn't matter because we don't do anything about it when those in government pervert it. So the federal government is buying up all of the supplies of monoclonal antibodies. And now we have, Michael Einhorn. He's the CEO of, I believe, the medical supplies company that distributes monoclonal antibodies across the Northeast and Southeast regions. And he's telling people that the government takeover of the supply chain is why it's making the backlogs and shortages worse. Well, there's a big surprise. You put government in charge of anything and they screw it up. He said the way the products are being distributed right now, relying on government to determine who gets what, that process can be very lengthy in terms of time. Now, whether you think monoclonal antibodies are a good solution or not, whether you believe they're a treatment for COVID-19 or not, why is government doing this? Why do we complain about every monopoly in the world except government monopoly? The government is creating a monopoly in monoclonal antibodies, and nobody is saying anything. Where are the antitrust charges? Where is Congress in this? Where are the courts? Where did the president get the authority to buy up all of these things, to have his branch of government buy them up? Where? To control medical supplies. I don't know why they want to do that, but it seems pretty obvious. My assumption is control. To turn the treatment of sick people into a political football. And that disgusts me. See, Mr. Einhorn said that physicians are reporting surpluses in certain areas and shortages in other areas because of the way government is made a mess of distributing this treatment. If you are trying to get monoclonal antibodies and you can't, you can thank the government in Washington, D.C. in large part because they got their fingers in the pie and are making a mess out of things. And while people are complaining, what are we doing? Ladies and gentlemen, what are you doing? Well, Paul, I can't make Biden change his mind. No, but you live in a state, don't you? You have a local community, don't you? Why are we the people not turning our counties into areas where the Constitution, rights, and liberty are still protected? And then hiring people in our states. You know, we talk about separation of powers. How about the separation of power between the states and the federal government? Where are the states going, hey, wait a second, government, we did not delegate to you the authority to control medical treatment. That's not in the Constitution. That's a power we reserve or belongs to our people. When do the states start standing up? I don't simply mean going, oh, Mr. Supreme Court, please protect us from the big bad Biden. I mean stand up and going, no, sir. What are the states going to do? Now, sadly, the states have given up most of their real power. The states gave up a say in federal legislation with the 17th Amendment when they gave us popular control or popular election of senators. They gave up control of taxation with the 16th Amendment when they allowed the federal government to directly tax us on income. But it's about time the states start saying, no more. When are the states going to do something? Well, the states aren't going to do anything until the citizens of those states demand it. I don't mean ask for it. I don't mean suggest it. I mean demand it. You want to serve in state government? You better support states' rights. You better support limiting the federal government. You better support doing your job as a check on an out-of-control federal government. Because if the states won't, eventually it will devolve to the people, and that, ladies and gentlemen, will be ugly. Now, I'm no fool. We spent 150 years making this mess. It's not going to be fixed overnight, but we better start. Because, you know, government is simply going to take more and more and more. You give them an inch of wiggle room, they will take a million miles of power from you. And this is just the latest example. And by the way, to everybody out there that's pointing the finger at Biden, remember, we the people appointed this idiot. Everything this dictator-in-chief is doing, he got there because the American people as a whole told the states to vote for him. Well, yeah, there was fraud. Yeah, you know what? There was fraud. There were illegal presidential electors appointed. They were illegally appointed. And what did the people in those states do to stop it? Not much. Not much. But I did the research. Even if the five states that I have proof illegally appointed electors, even if we ignored those electors, Biden would have still won by one electoral vote. But those elections were handled by the states. So they're our fault too. So if there was corruption in the election, if there was fraud in the election, beyond what I've already documented, it's because we the people allowed it to happen. We allowed the laws to go in place that went to corrupting the process. We even went the law, put the laws in place that allowed the political parties to control the electoral process. Maybe that's something I should talk about in the near future. We got an election coming up this year, a midterm election. Maybe I'll talk about that a little later this year. But we keep looking for someone else to blame rather than looking in the mirror and saying, you know what? It's my fault. Either I contributed to it or I didn't do enough to stop it. And it's a bitter pill to swallow. But if we don't swallow it, if we don't realize that whatever government does, that does in our name, with our authority, because we let it happen. If we don't learn from James Garfield, now more than ever, The people are responsible for the character of their Congress. I claim it's not just Congress. I claim it's government at all levels. President Garfield said, if that body be ignorant, reckless, and corrupt, it's because the people tolerate ignorance, recklessness, and corruption. Yes, the American people tolerate ignorance, recklessness, and corruption in government at all levels. We tolerate it. That's why we have it. President Garfield said, if it be intelligent, brave, and pure, it's because the people demand these high qualities to represent them in the national legislature. Well, we need to demand it to represent us in all branches of all levels of government. Because if we don't, we are well on our way to the Soviet Union, Communist China, Pol Pot's Cambodia, Castro's Cuba, Venezuela, to these tin pot dictatorial socialist cesspools. You know, they say they want everybody to be equal. But they never tell you that they want them to be equally miserable. And if America goes the way of those countries, it won't be solely because the politicians did so. It'll be because, in large part, the American people never stood up and said no. We never took on our rights and said, no. We created you. We can take you out and create a new one just like you. We never treated our elected officials like employees. And now they treat us as their subjects. You can find out more about my show, get all the latest podcasts. Just go to AmericaOutloud.com. Look under our shows or schedules. You'll find the Constitution Study, and you can share the blessings of liberty to yourselves and your posterity.
Paid bills, stay out of jail, love the neighbors, and have a few good friends.